I think you should build a career in data science.
Welcome to Build a Career in Data Science. I'm your host, Emily Robinson.
And I'm also your host, Jacqueline Nolas.
This podcast is a data download into all the non-technical knowledge and skills you need to succeed in a data science career. From getting into the field to becoming a seasoned expert, we're covering it here. In season one of the podcast, we'll be discussing a different chapter of our book, also called Build a Career in Data Science, each week. You can buy the book at bestbook.cool and get 40% off with the code BUILDBOOK40%. But if you don't have it yet, you won't get any less enjoyment out of the podcast.
But you should buy the book anyway.
Yeah, it's a little bit more about, like, you know, why you should buy this book. So we designed this book for people who were either looking to enter the field of data science or had just started their first data science job, or even people who've been in the field for a couple of years but are thinking about, you know, how they want to move up. And there are 16 chapters in the book, along with an interview appendix of 30 example interview questions, example answers, and the reasoning for why we would give these types of answers. And this podcast, we wanted to be a supplement to the book. So it's both, in some cases, a summary of some of the main points of the chapters, but also about our personal experiences that didn't really make sense to put into the book, but we think can still be illuminating for people who are curious about getting into or advancing in data science.
Yes, it's our hot takes too hot for publishing. Can only be done on podcast.
So Jacqueline, why don't you tell listeners a little bit about yourself?
So I'm Jacqueline Nolas. I am a principal data scientist at Brightloom. Before that, I was for many years a data science consultant, consulting for lots of companies. And I just got back from the beach and I'm still in my bathing suit and I'm going to have really chill vibes this whole episode.
I mean, I'm drinking a Cosmopolitan right now, so I think okay. We'll match there.
Both have chill vibes. Good. And how about you? Who are you?
I'm Emily Robinson. I'm a senior data scientist at Warby Parker, and before that, a data scientist at DataCamp and Etsy. Let's give a brief overview about what we'll be talking about today, which is getting the skills for data science. So we're going to be discussing the different paths you can take if you're interested in becoming a data scientist, because in episode one, we covered these, you know, the kind of skills you need to be a data scientist, which are some technical skills in programming and math and statistics, and also some skills or knowledge around the domain space that you work in. So, yeah. Jacqueline, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, and like, this is probably like the number one thing people come and talk to us about. Like, how do you get into data science? What about a bootcamp or a blah, 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 like, how do I get in? Like the question of like, okay, which mechanism do I use to gain the skills I need to be a data scientist is like, everyone wants to know. It's just the hottest topic that people come to us with.
And it makes sense because it's a very, you know, getting these skills, some of the options are, they're all pretty time intensive and some of them cost quite a lot of money as well. So it's, you know, important to be informed before choosing one of them and knowing the benefits and drawbacks of each.
Just a super high level. In our book, we've outlined four different ways you can get the skills you need to be a data scientist. And we understand these aren't necessarily exactly, there are only four ways to get them, but I think these are by far the most common. So one of them is you go and get like a master's or an academic degree. You pay tens of thousands of dollars to get accredited as a data scientist or in a field related. The second one is a boot camp. And a boot camp is like a 12-week program to get you the skills really quickly. The third method is just learning on the job yourself. And lastly, there is teaching yourself, you know, in your free time. So that's as high, it's deep I'm going to go until we dive in. Shall we get started? Do we want to, which one do you want to talk
about?
Let's
do it. Let's start with that data science degree option or general degree option, because I think that's the one that often comes to mind for people.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the people who talk to me and probably you too, Emily, like it seems like most common is someone who has an undergrad degree in something sort of STEM related. And they're like, okay, but now I want to switch to data science. Should I go get a master's in data, something related to data science to do that? Although sometimes it's becoming increasingly common that people in their undergrad are like, what undergrad do I get because I want to be a data scientist?
Yeah. So this is a hard question. Because I mean, like, you'd sort of be like, well, duh, like if you want to go into data science, get a master's degree in data science, right? But the thing is, those degrees are all pretty new. Like they didn't exist, I think, more than even like 4 years ago. And so one, that means they're not as well tested. Two, some universities are definitely just looking to cash in on the data science craze and don't have great curriculum planning, just sort of smushed together some courses from the stats department and the computer science department. And it just means it's a bit untested. So I do think you have to be a little wary. And, you know, in general, when you're looking at grad schools, you should do this, but really look into like, what if people who have completed this degree, what do they go on to do?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's like 2 years. A master's like 2 years, undergrad's like four, right? It's like years of your life, tens of thousands of dollars. And yeah, it's like sometimes they're not. So the what you may learn in your study may actually be totally unrelated to what data scientists do. And I actually have a little bit of a story about this. So at my college, in my undergrad, there was a program, a new major came out, and it was a major for people who want to do video game development. And they're like, hey, look, this video game development program, it's going to have some computer science in it. It's going to have some art in it. It's going to have a little business. It's going to have a little bit of everything you need as a video game designer and like to work in the field of video games. And lots of people signed up. But then in the end, they ended up having trouble getting jobs because people with those degrees, like they weren't good fits for the programming degrees because they didn't have as much programming as the people who study computer science. They weren't, you know, they didn't have enough art for the compared to the people who had art degrees. And so because it was a degree that was like an amalgamation of like things from four other fields, no, like you didn't become an expert in any one of them. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with a data science degree, but I do think that's the risk there compared to like computer science or like my background's in mathematics. And like these things are not exactly the same as data science or, you know, like a lot of what you learn in a math degree is totally unrelated to data science. But, you know, it really like it taught me like I got to go really deep in math, which I think learning how to go really deep in something and then how to not go deep in it strategically, I think that was really helpful for me.
Yeah. And I think also like most master's programs, you have some electives that you can take, right? They're not all prescribed courses. And so if you want, like say you get a master's in stats, you could take some computer science courses. Plus, I mean, this is more specific for stats, but any good stats master's degree, if you're looking to get into data science, should have a pretty heavy programming component in the courses. You don't want to be going just for a theoretical stats degree where you, I don't even know. I mean, my stats undergrad used R. I'm not sure what the other, I know in psych it's like SPSS, MATLAB. I don't know what the uncool people do.
My PhD dissertation was in MATLAB.
There you go. Yeah, you're uncool, yeah. Jacqueline.
We talk about MATLAB a lot on this data science podcast. Yeah.
And not very nice. No. But yeah, I mean, I think, so, you know, something when you're thinking about doing, you know, a degree is there's like, so let's say you do decide like, you know, you want a degree because there's some advantages to it, right? You get, you know, you have formal time set aside for your learning. Let's say you're doing a full time. We'll talk about part time in a bit. But, you know, that's the only thing you're doing. You're dedicated to doing that. You have peers who are also going through that. You can do study groups, homework. You have faculty, hopefully, you can learn from. You know, so let's say you decide this is a path for you. But, you know, Jacqueline, can you talk a little about, like, how do you choose what school? I mean, there's, like, right, hundreds or thousands of schools. Let's say even once you settle on, I want to do a stats or I want to do data science or I want to do a computer science degree.
Yeah. So I think when it comes to choosing a school, you know, I think it's really, like, there's a whole list of things that are important. Right, that they like they have project-based work, so you're really doing hands-on stuff that's practical, right? It seems like their course material are related to industry. It's not just totally being taught by professors who haven't updated the curriculum in 20 years. I think a lot of the stuff that's important. I think prestige of the school is less important than people think it is generally, right? Because it's like it's very rare that someone's like hiring for a data science job. There are only a few schools where that person was like, oh wow, you went to MIT, like, wow, that really changes my perception of you. It was like, you know, if you go to like, there's like million middle of the road schools. And like, I think anything in that, besides like very few totally stellar people will recognize the name. I think, you know, that doesn't matter so much. Like really it's like, is it in a city you like? And all this is like pre-COVID. So like, you know, everything's online now, but like, is it in a location you like? Is it convenient? Are you going to actually be able to finish this and not just accumulate a huge pile of debt? Like that stuff is more important than the prestige of the program or how well it is regarded within the academic community compared to industry.
I think those are really good points. Like you said, like, yes, if you go to Harvard or MIT, that may make like the recruiter's ears prick up, but like sort of after the, I don't know, like top 10 or whatever, or top 20, it doesn't really matter nearly as much. No. And I think one thing for any listeners, listeners who are listening, who are maybe undergraduates, like maybe at one of these prestigious schools. Like, it's funny because I think when you're in high school, like at least for me, I went to a private school in New York, and like college was very important. A lot of people went to very prestigious schools. It just seemed like, wow, this is like really like the only way to do it. And now I realize, like, now that I'm working, like, one, I don't know what schools most of my teammates went to. The occasional time, like, I've connected on LinkedIn, I've looked, and they've gone to, you know, some schools I haven't heard of, like, you know, and they're the best people I work with. So I really do think it's easy to overestimate, like, how important both the name brand is for getting you into a, like, job that you want, and, like, how much better, in quotes, your education will be if you go to one of these.
Yeah, and just, I mean, in our intros in this podcast, we were like, I'm Jacqueline Nolas, I got my degrees from blah, blah, blah school. No, it's like, that's not nearly as important. After, like, after getting your first job, okay, it may matter a little there, but very quickly, yeah. It's important.
Yes, actually, I do want to add one just brief thing, which is just like a part-time master's, a shout out to that. So this is an option you could think about, especially now things are more online. There are some good like online part-time masters. The advantage there is, you know, there's lower opportunity costs. You can keep working while you're doing it. And some companies will also pay at least part of your tuition, like Warby Parker, my company, for example. So just something to think about. You know, is another option. The downside, obviously, being you're quite busy for those years you're doing both of them, but it can save you money if you're doing it online, and also save you money if, you know, if you're not able to stop working full time and dedicate $40,000 in a year to a master's degree when you're earning no money.
So also, I know a lot of people who are already data scientists and have data science jobs and are in the field, and they're like, I'm thinking about going and getting a master's in data scientist. And I was a little surprised. Like, I know very good data scientists who say that, who have said that to me. And I'm like, well, why is that? You seem quite accomplished and things are going quite well. And they're like, well, I kind of have this feeling like I'm missing a lot of knowledge because I don't have a graduate degree. And I feel a little bit like I am not being viewed as like as good at this job as I have because of this degree. So really, I just want the degree. You know, I want to go get the degree. I want to learn the skills. But really, it's about confidence and perception from by others for me and things like that. And like, I think that's, you know, if that's what you need to do, like, by all means, like, I think, you know, I think that's, that is a fair reason to go get a master's. But like, yeah, I think being honest with the, like, it's like being honest with yourself, like, wow, I really do know a lot and I'm a good data scientist and I don't need this degree to define me, but also I would feel more secure about it. So like, that's okay. Like that's all right. Like that is a fair reason to get a master's.
Yeah. Oh wait, now I have one more point, Jacqueline, which is we have to do the PhD blurb, which is don't get a PhD if you want to go into data science. Like it can seem attractive because most of the, depending on the program, a lot of them, there's no tuition and they may give you a stipend, like sometimes in exchange for teaching duties. You're like, that's great. Like, plus like I get to like just learn for 5 years. No, no, no. Don't do a PhD because you want to go into industry. Most of them are not set up for that. It's going to be a miserable slog. If you want to do a PhD, you really, really have to like be so interested in doing research.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
We'll talk more in our backgrounds.
That's our ASMR episode. It's just us being like, don't get a PhD.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk more. Yeah. Later in the segment, we're going to talk about our own backgrounds and you'll see why.
But we'll talk about how I got a PhD.
and I dropped out of my PhD program.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about boot camps. So I would like you to do the talk on this as the one of us who actually was in a boot camp.
Yes, I did. So I did a boot camp, which is Metis, back in summer of 2016. So boot camp. So as Jacqueline said in the intro, they're usually about, you know, 12 weeks, 15 weeks. This is if they're full time. They do still cost money, but a lot less than a master's degree program. So I think Metis was around $14,000 when I did it. They also had discounts for women and veterans, and I think maybe also Black and Latinx people to help encourage diversity in the field. So that was pretty great. Yeah, so what are boot camps? So boot camps are actually, most of them are not designed to take you from zero to 60, to take someone, for example, who's never programmed before, never done stats, and like, poof, produce a data scientist in the end of 12 weeks. So there is an admissions process. You're expected to have, you know, like a working knowledge of programming, a working knowledge of statistics. This is tested as part of the interview process. And there's also some pre-work, you know, if you come from a background that's stronger in one than the other, to like help bone up on the rest. So in my boot camp, it was about 22 students, and they ranged from a recent college graduate in computer science to someone with 20 years in marketing experience to people who were professors of psychology. So people come from a pretty wide variety of backgrounds into the boot camp. And what I liked about Metis, and I think most boot camps are similar, is that it's very project-based. So there were a couple hours of classes in the morning, but the rest of the afternoon, besides the first week, you were working on independent projects, and these got less and less guided. And what's really great about that is, well, one, if you're someone who, say, came from a very strong programming background, and so, you know, you can pretty quickly like scrape some data on the web. Maybe your project is more focused on the statistical part, or, you know, maybe you come from the opposite. Like I did a project where I realized like the point was to do something with web scraping. I was like, you know what? I don't really want to do web scraping. I'm going to use an API instead and focus more of the project time on, you know, munging data with pandas and Python. And the idea is you come out of the boot camp with a portfolio of projects. You are encouraged to have a GitHub profile where you share the code. You have a blog. And so for me, it was a good choice. But I do want to say, you know, there's a cost there, obviously. And I will end with there's also, unfortunately, I mean, we've talked in this podcast before about gatekeeping, but there can be a stigma against bootcamp graduates. I don't think necessarily by hiring managers. I love your take on that, Jacqueline, but there's definitely someone like Reddit, like, oh yeah, that person just like went to a bootcamp. And I find that really annoying, but it's something to be aware of.
You sound like you personally were hurt by that.
There was a mean Reddit thread about that was like, yeah, people think they can go into data science, which is a bootcamp, which, you know, which just seems like the background Emily has, which, as we'll talk about later, I have more than that background anyway. But yeah, so I mean, it's something to be aware of. But that being said, you know, if it's, you know, hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about choosing a bootcamp. But if it's a good bootcamp, like alumni have definitely gone on to be, you know, pretty successful, like whether as a data analyst, data engineer, data scientist, so on and so forth. But there's also some alum who don't find a job in the field. And even if you do, it can take a couple months. You have to be okay with being out of work maybe for 6 months or more.
Yeah. So I will say, one time I, as a person who was hiring for a data science team, I did hire someone with a boot camp. I helped the cause. But yeah, I think what I would like to know is, so my understanding of these boot camps is they, at the end, you know, they do this like big panel where you present to a bunch of employers from the area and then they could potentially hire you. Is like, I'm trying to think of like how to word this, like in a not mean way, but like, is
like,
that
does
real?
It work?
Yeah, does it work? Because like I can't tell from the outside if like, wow, companies really do come in and just hire people, boop, 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 or it's like, oh, that's all, you know, some pony show, and you know, yeah, does that work?
So some companies definitely did. So there was like I think it was like one was like maybe a consulting firm. I think also Digitas LBI was another one that did like regularly hire Metis graduates. But I would say maybe even more so than these hiring kind of partners who come to this like sort of career presentation is the alumni network, I think, has actually grown quite valuable, especially as some of these boot camps have been around now for like 5-6 years. You know, they have alums at a lot of places. Like I talked to Metis alum when I was at Etsy. People were interested. You know, they have people like Facebook, Amazon, all these different companies. And, you know, it varies, but it's always nice when you're reaching out to someone to like learn more, like maybe a referral, to have something in common.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to keep lobbing these questions because and this is like legitimate curiosity as a person who's only hired people from boot camps, not someone who's been in. I guess the perception is that from a boot camp is that it's like that you get a lot of knowledge, but it's very like it's not very deep, which is to say like, oh, the moment you poke on it a little bit, like, oh, you know how to do a linear regression. But the moment I ask you like, oh, can I do a generalized linear regression? I don't know. Yeah. Like some
sure,
twist.
Sure.
And like, did you find that to be the case that like you're like, wow, the knowledge I learned from this boot camp very quickly, you know, I grew out of it? Or it's like, do you look back and you're like, oh, no, that really was the essentials enough that I could then figured all the rest out on my own without trouble.
Yeah. I mean, I think this goes back a little bit to it's not a 0 to 60. So people coming, and like this was true in terms of like, who did I see in my cohort who was successful in the job hunt afterward? Like they did usually have some background that was relevant. I mean, I think Metis helped, but it's not, no one's going to hire you because like you have the bootcamp on your resume, right? Like the point of the bootcamp is not versus like, say maybe getting a Harvard degree, you know, a degree from Harvard in statistics where you're like this, like degree, like having this on my resume is an important line item. The bootcamp is like, what knowledge did you get? How do you show that in a portfolio and like in technical interviews? So I think, yes, there's probably some like things that, I don't know, like support vector machines was something that was covered. And like, did I learn that? Well, not really, but you know, there's other things where like, yeah, I did a project where I did topic modeling. And that actually, I think, like, could, you know, do with some prodding, because I did in like doing the work on it, I was like, oh, yeah, like a big thing about this is it doesn't come with labels. And I saw some interesting things where like a couple topics, I would label the same thing as a human. But if I decrease the number of topics, you know, those didn't go away. So I would say yes and no. Like, certainly, I don't think you gain in-depth knowledge of everything that's covered in the bootcamp, but you do get a basics, and it does, through the projects, you do get depth in some of them. And I think like that's the thing in data science in general, right? Like, if you poked at, like, I don't know, Jack, maybe that's not it, but like, I don't know, your time series knowledge, right? Like, oh, I don't know how deep that would go.
It's so fragile. Yeah.
Right. Like, everyone, like, all of us have, yeah, like, what some people may be like, this is fundamental, like, data science knowledge. It's like, well, honestly, like, I've never had a, you know, opportunity to use it. I haven't needed to know it. I trust that if I did, like, my foundations would let me, you know, dive into it and I can learn it. But, like, I don't think that's a negative that, yes, maybe there are some areas that bootcamp grads are fragile. I mean, like, honestly, I think most job applicants, that's the thing, right? You get a statistics graduate, and like, how deep do they know like computer science algorithms? Like, probably not much at all.
Yes. No, I think you're right. Okay, let's move on. So the next one we have is learning on the job. So learning on the job, when we talk about learning on the job, like, one way you could, if you are not a data scientist yet and you want to learn the skills to be a data scientist, is if you at your work have a data set, and you have an opportunity, you can try doing the data science work yourself and trying to learn it that way. So for instance, you know, like at a company I've been at, you know, we had some survey data that no one really looked at, and we had an employee who really wanted to get better at data science, took that data set and on their own, like, learned some topic modeling and other, you know, techniques so that they could actually try and grow as a data scientist and just understand this stuff better. And no one was telling this employee to do it. He just really interested and self-motivated. And because I was there and other data scientists were there, he was able to kind of get like a nice mentor network. And so the idea of learning on the job and just finding these opportunities where there's just little places where there's some data you can analyze, like, I think that's maybe not talked about that often, but like, that is a really great way that you can learn the skill for free. And depending on your employer, you may have people who can mentor you and like a nice safe environment to do this.
Yeah. And I think like this is helped by, there's a lot of jobs that have become more analytical and more data focused. So like, marketing is a big one that comes to mind immediately. So at my last company, someone transitioned. So a startup, I think this is a bit easier, but he was originally hired sort of for the marketing team, but he was interested in data science. So he attended these like weekly sessions led by the chief data scientist. He started up, and marketing is very ripe for this, right? Like, how are our ads performing? You know, what's the most common source people visit our website from, so on and so forth. So I think this is a really good option to look for. And it's important to know, like, why this is helpful, I think, also because it's one of the least, certainly these cost intensive ways, but also one of, I think, actually least time intensive, because, you know, hopefully you can do this like as part of your regular job as you're becoming more efficient at it. Like, maybe use Excel spreadsheets and now you start using R or Python. And it's a way to kind of test the waters. Like, is this work interesting to you before you go and commit a year of your life and $40,000 to a data science master's degree program?
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe you can do this enough that eventually you can switch over to the data, actually being on the data science team at your company, things like that. So ways this doesn't work, like, this can, I'd say this has some ways it doesn't work. One, it doesn't work, like, not every job actually has some opportunities for data. Like, you just may not find, you're so busy, or there's really not any data near you, or, you know, like, there's just not an opportunity. So like, this one, it's kind of like just a little bit of luck of the draw with your company that you have these opportunities. Another way it can go wrong is that, you know, if you don't find a mentor, or like, you know, like, maybe you do have a data science team, but they're all, you know, kind of yikes, not really into helping others and also busy, like, that can be a problem. And also, you have to manage, you actually have to manage other people, right? Like, you, if the data science team is helping you out and you really waste their time, they may get upset. Like, it's just like, it can get a little icky. So like, it's not like a silver bullet great way to get into data science. It's just like, it's a kind of a shortcut if you can find it.
Yeah. And also, like, we'll talk about this more in later episodes. This isn't necessarily you do this and then you like land a data scientist job. It's like, maybe you do this and you get a data analyst job at another company, right? Or like, and you start like working your way gradually more towards it. But I would say, like, you're right, Jacqueline, but also, you know, keep a lookout, especially if you're in a data adjacent job, that does sometimes work with the data science or maybe data analytics or data engineering team. There are some people, I will count myself in this, who are really excited to see someone who is like genuinely motivated and interested in learning more. And you know, that person, you know, could be very willing to spend an hour like every 2 weeks with you, could be like sending you resources when you get stuck. I think, you know, in general, it's sort of like fostering any good mentorship or sponsorship relationship, which is, you know, you show you're excited to learn, that you're motivated, that you're dedicating time to it. You're not just asking them to spend time on you and then you, you know, don't follow their advice. But, you know, I think they're really, you can be on the lookout for people who really do want to share this knowledge, and also maybe how you can help their team. Like if you have been sending them, you know, really complicated Excel spreadsheets that then they like have to like turn into R, like they might be very excited to help you like transform your whole workflow into R, right? Or to transform these like, yeah, as we call them in some companies, artisanal handcrafted Excel spreadsheets into the Looker dashboard, right? And like they, like, you know, we've had this on our team, like another department is really like we help them like transform their Excel spreadsheets into Looker dashboards, and you know, it saves them a lot of time. They were super excited to learn how that worked, and we were excited about that because that's great. Like maybe then they can continue to maintain it themselves. They can build on it. It will eventually save us time. Like plus, like we like this stuff. We like other people to do it.
Okay, so then let's talk about the last type, which is teaching yourself.
Teaching yourself.
This is all those Coursera's, the online courses and materials and just blog posts and reading and learning on your own. And so people kind of talk about like, oh, you know, online courses is like the new thing. And like, you can like, what a world of knowledge out there just waiting to be learned. And so it is true. This is certainly a path you can use to become a data scientist. But like, I think it's by far the hardest because like, for me personally, I am terrible at staying motivated, right? Like if I have to learn, I have to go through courses every day and you got to click on buttons and stuff. Like I'm out so fast. And I think trying to match all the things you learn in like a 2-year master's program where they force you to sit in a desk and do nothing but listen, like online coursing will never match that for me. And I think that's true for a lot of people. Like it's very easy to sign up for it, do it for a week, and then kind of lose the steam. The times that teaching yourself has been really successful for me, it's like whenever I have like one particular thing I really want to learn and I have like a project, like if I want to learn how TensorFlow works and I have a project to use TensorFlow, like then I can really find the motivation, but like it's hard. And so teaching yourself is great, I would say. And like, I think the more you can do the better, but like just, it's very know yourself, you know, don't just think, oh, and then I'll do it because I know I want to do it, and then I'll do it and I'll be done, I'll be a data scientist. Like really just think, be really smart and strategic about how you're going to use your time. And then one other part on teaching yourself is what you learn is largely dependent on what you think is important, which depends a lot on what you read there. And there's a lot of knowledge out there in places that's maybe not necessarily the most connected to what industry thinks is important. So just for in general, data scientists on the internet think like by far the most important thing is getting these enormous data science models that are enormously accurate. And you want to do more than anything, make accurate, robust models more than say make models that you can easily sell to the client or models that are easy to run or all these things. I would dare say that the internet data science is more bro than industry. And I think you can, if you only teach yourself and only go on like the data science Reddit, things like that, you might have a perspective that is much more bro-y than would best suit you when you're trying to get a job.
Yeah. I mean, I think you really hit on the point there of where it's worked, Jacqueline, is when you've had a specific like motivating use case and also a scoped problem, because I think it's so hard to be like, I want to learn data science. And like part of the advantage that, you know, master's programs and boot camps, even learning on the job gives you is it gives you, I mean, the master's boot camp case, here is your curriculum, here's what you're going to learn. And the learning on the job, like, oh, I need to learn how to use Tableau or Looker or whatever, right, to like solve this problem, versus online learning. If you just start from like, I don't know, I want to learn data science, it's so easy to lose that motivation. And because you don't have community, I think both of us have really loved the data science community. Both of us are pretty active on Twitter. At least that's where I've met people, also in like our conferences. And that's something you can miss in most online learning opportunities, is you don't like have a community of your peers that you're learning from versus if you're in a boot camp or a degree program or even on the job, right, with your colleagues. So I think there are burgeoning options for this, like the R for data science learning community is one option, which is a mostly a Slack community around the R for data science book. Where you can have some mentors who answer your questions, but maybe even more important than that, just other people who are in the same place as you are, who can be encouraging or maybe are one step ahead. And they're like, yeah, that was confusing, but like, you know, I ended up figuring out you can too. So I do think if you're going to go through this option, try to find other people, but be warned, as Jacqueline said, of the bro-y and often very gatekeepy, and I think maybe those two are related, you know, the way that the data science on the internet can be. So I think, Jacqueline, you said it best, like online learning is sort of very attractive because one, it's generally free. Two, it's like, wow, I can watch like all the MIT lectures online. But I think the motivation, the following through is the hardest part. And finally, I think you can... There's a bit of controversy about this, about like whether you should list online certifications like on your resume or on your LinkedIn. I think generally it's fine to list them. I think it can show yourself motivated, but sort of like the bootcamp, the more important thing is like, what are the skills you learn from it? Like no one's going to hire you because you took this online course. They're going to hire you because you can show through a portfolio or the technical interviews that you can actually do the thing that you say you learned in this course, because unfortunately some people can complete a course without learning a whole lot just by like watching the video.
And I will learn a whole lot as we take our break. This week's episode is sponsored by Snakecase. Formatting your data's columns into Snakecase and sliver on over to good data hygiene. It could be a hassle to remember column names if they're inconsistent, some with caps and some with spaces, but Snakecase, all of your variables are lowercase and each word is separated by an underscore. With Snakecase, using your table columns is as easy as being a rattlesnake at a rope impersonating competition. And we're back. And so now we thought it'd be fun, a little fun, if we just a little dived into each of our own decisions on how we got their data science skills and which of these four paths we took. So we could talk about our own paths and we can critique each other's and give compliments and really just explore the
space. You made some bad life choices, Jacqueline. That's what I'm going to say.
We're going to really take out all the dirty laundry here in a podcast. Yeah, that's what they're for. Okay, so do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll start. So I mentioned a little earlier, so I did a bootcamp Metis, and I dropped out of PhD program. So like rolling back a little bit. So I think you heard this on episode one, but folks who haven't heard this, I had my undergraduate degree in decision sciences, which was a major I created myself, a mix of statistics, economics, psychology, and also minored in stats. I then decided to start a PhD program in organizational behavior, which is essentially psychology and sociology applied to work in organizations at INSEAD, which is a university in France and Singapore. And so I, like I said, I entered the PhD program. So good thing about that is I paid no tuition and I got a stipend that was, you know, it wasn't a lot, but it was enough to live off of in a small town in France, about an hour from Paris. But as I said, I dropped out. So why did I do that? So the first 2 years, and this is like somewhat common about PhD programs, it can vary, but first, at least your first year is almost always like mostly classes, and your second year, maybe a few classes and a mix of, but like also research. And you have what are called the comprehensive exams at the end of your second year, sometimes your first year, which is sort of a, you know, long, like a 2-day exam about what you've learned. And so, and after that, you have basically no more classes and you just are doing research. And it depends on the PhD program. There are some that are a little more geared towards industry, but most PhD programs are prefaced on the idea you want to go to academia, which was very much what INSEAD was. And I realized sort of about like a year, year and a half in, that I did not really want to do this. And I knew that, sort of, I knew myself and I was like, well, the choice is either leaving after 2 years when I get my master's degree, or if I went longer, there are plenty of folk who leave PhDs in their fourth year, even fifth year without earning the degree. It's called, you know, what is it, Jack? It's like without
ABD.
Dissertation. ABD, thank you. All but dissertation. Yes. So that's definitely an option, but I kind of knew myself. I was like, well, I wouldn't really want to do this. So if I'm staying, I'm going to commit to another 3 or even 4 years, because PhD is going to take 5, 6, 7 years. And like I said, it's really gearing you to go to academia. So I decided I didn't really want to do that. And so I'm like, well, what do I want to do? I was like, well, data science sounds appealing. And so I went and did Metis, the boot camp that I mentioned. And I think my background served well there because I had as I mentioned, minor in stats. I did statistics courses as part of my master's. I had also been programming in R since freshman year. And so I think it really served well to then want to go to the boot camp and be like, all right, let me supplement this with Python, machine learning, and also version control, Git and GitHub, and finally a portfolio of projects.
So would you say you're like 10 out of 10 satisfied with that boot camp? Like, it, like you seem like you're pretty accomplished. Like, did that do what you needed it to?
It did. I mean, I think there are two things about it though. One is I could do that. I moved home to New York where I'm from and I live with my parents. So I didn't have to pay rent. I also didn't have any dependents. I had been earning a stipend that essentially was just enough to live off of. So it wasn't like, wow, I was earning, you know, $80,000 a year and had a lifestyle, you know, around that. And then I was earning zero. So that was an easier transition. And two, like, I will say I did not apply for jobs before starting the bootcamp. And part of this was I was living in France up to about a week before the bootcamp. And I think, and also like doing my comprehensive exams, finishing some research, I think it would have been challenging to apply from jobs like remotely in New York. But that is to say, I don't know the alternative, you know, the alternative universe where I didn't do the boot camp and how I would have done.
Well, and you could have imagined an alternate universe where you went and got a master's in data science after dropping out of your PhD program.
Oh, no.
That was a good face. I wish the audience could see your face.
No, I mean, in general, my sort of thought is like, I guess there are people who do 2 masters. I didn't really feel the need to get a second master's. I felt like I'd had enough relevant, like, you know, formal like classes and degree programs. And, you know, the bootcamp like costs money, but it did not cost as much money as a master's degree, you know, both in terms of actual tuition, but also in terms of opportunity costs, like taking a year. So actually that never crossed my mind to like, I don't know. And plus there's just all these like formal, like the nice thing about a bootcamp, it is a competitive, depending on the bootcamp, it can be a competitive admissions process, but it's pretty much just based on your resume, your interview and like a technical take home versus like master's degree programs. Like you gotta get a letter of recommendation and maybe you have to take the GRE, you know, and you have to do this. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd taken the GRE to get into NCI and it was still valid, but I don't know that honestly it never, and plus in 2016, I'm not sure there really were almost any data science degree programs.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. So really, kind of your story, it really would just be a boot camp, or you could have taught yourself at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Or it could have been, like, I do think I would have needed a little bit more before applying to jobs, like most specifically getting GitHub. But yeah, I think I hadn't thought of, and I guess I could have also, I guess the third option would have been like learning on the job. Right, I could have gotten a related job, but I don't know what that would have been.
Yeah, and I imagine it would have been hard to get. Yeah, it would have been hard to get the job before you had that boot camp.
Yeah. Knowledge. So, yeah. I mean, in general, like I was definitely happy with it, but I do want to caveat that with like I was very privileged. I didn't have to. Well, I mean, I had to move from France to New York, but I was moving out of France anyway. I could live with my parents. Like, I wasn't like suddenly going from like, you know, a lot of income to none. I didn't have like people to support, and I knew I could go. You know, for as it ended up being about 6 months between 3 months of the boot camp, like 3 months job searching, and you know, be okay with that without having a salary.
Yes, that's a good point. But also, a master's is like 2 years without a salary, right? Like,
yeah, a master's is a lot more. So, yeah, I mean, compared to like learning on the job or like, but also the other thing is like. I do think it would have been really hard to job search from France. So I would have been out of work probably for a couple months anyway, like learning, you know, as if I moved back to New York at the end of June, applying to job. Also, summer, at least in New York, is a bad time to apply to jobs because like traditionally, you know, COVID's changed everything. But like traditionally, a lot of people are on vacation. It's just slower, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But Jacqueline, so that's a bit about me. What about you? Miss, like, actually not even Miss, Dr. Nolis. Tell me about your background.
Okay, so I think, we covered some of this episode one, but basically I got an undergrad and master's in math, and this is before data science was a thing. So I'm like, oh, I got an undergrad and master's. I'm going to go do math at a company. And that was analytics, which isn't called analytics, which is now called data science. So it was a data science job, it just wasn't called like that. And I didn't really like that job for various reasons. And then I went to a different job for like a year or two. And I really liked that job for various reasons. And a lot of it came down to this idea that I really wanted to do more technical work than I was given. Like, I really wanted to be thinking about, you know, applying algorithms and coming up with new methods and doing all this real stuff. Whereas I think a lot of the work I was giving was like more make an Excel spreadsheet for an executive. Like, you know, just make a like a report, like a one-off report kind of a thing. Which is like fine. I think that's like a fine job for most people. But for whatever reason, I was just like, I really want to be like really just thinking about algorithms and decision science-y kind of stuff. And so I did the thing where you're like, oh, I mean, the issue must be I don't have enough technical skills and I'm going to go learn more technical skills by getting a master's, except I already had a master's. So I'm like, I will do this, but with a PhD. Like a PhD will get me the technical skills I need for the technical jobs. So I went into a PhD program at Arizona State University. And I went in with very much with a mindset of maybe I'll go back into industry with this PhD, or maybe I'll be a professor if I like academia better. Let's kind of see how it plays out. And during my PhD program, I realized I did not like academia. It was not at all a fit for me. And so I was very much set on going back into industry. And I actually got a part-time job during my PhD as a data science consultant, which is how I got into consulting. And so I finished the PhD, and then at that point, I became a consultant. And so on the one hand, that PhD really helped, because after I finished it, I really was like, I would walk into a room and people would be like, oh, that woman has a PhD. She really knows what she's talking about. Like, it gave me a little gravitas that I think like legitimately helped my career. But in my PhD, the PhD research I did has nothing to do with any of the work I've done since getting the PhD. Of the courses I took, and I didn't have to take that many because I already had a master's, but in the courses I took, only two of them actually had any relevance to what I actually do now, which is one, the machine learning course, and two, the AI course I took. That's two courses in a multi-year PhD program. And there was an opportunity cost because, you know, I had an RA ship, so it meant I got paid a little bit of money to do some research as my job, and I had that consulting gig, but like that still was not, that was not the same money as like actually working in those jobs I had before. So like I could have been making progressively more money. And so like it was hard. And I finished my PhD fairly quickly. So like I didn't take that much of a loss. But like it really, like the PhD did not, I do not think it actually paid off. Like it's fun to say I have this cool title. Like I like to, you know, it's fun to flaunt it every now and then. But like it really, I don't think was a meaningful, useful thing. Like there's no point in my job of like, wow, in these years since getting that PhD, I would not have been able to do this without a PhD.
Did you enjoy getting a PhD, though?
Oh, that's a good question. Did I enjoy getting a PhD? I think I kind of did. I did. I liked doing the research. I thought that was enjoyable. So my research was on electrical vehicle routing. So it's all this, like, where if you're Tesla and you're going to put down charging stations, where do you put down the charging stations? And how do you route cars between, like, which station should which car go to? So it was kind of like fun math problems, and I enjoyed doing that. I enjoyed thinking about that. I despise the process of publishing and waiting a year to get like a kind of snarky...
A year if you're lucky. Oh my God. I know people with like 7 years of trying to publish a paper.
I mean, I really didn't like that. I didn't really like the salaries, and I really don't like the concept. And I don't necessarily know if this is the right moment of a podcast to talk about this, but I mean, in academia, there's very much a, you get tenure and you're there forever and things are just the way they are because that's the way they are. And, you know, just as how things have always been. So there's really like a resistance to change that you would not expect in the organization people accuse of being liberal. Like I found it very conservative in ways where like, if you're working at a small company and you're like, I think I have a good idea for how we could do this in a new way. People are like, great, go do it. Like no one's going to stop you. Whereas in academia, it feels like everyone's trying to stop everyone all the time. And like, that's just not for me. I also find the act of reading academic papers, I find that laborious, like the act of like reading the super dense thing where people word things so concisely you can't possibly understand what they're trying to say. And they try to figure out what like, oh, here's, oh, I understand now. You're actually talking about something much simpler than it makes it sound. Like that process I really dislike. And I think people think that data scientists in their job every day are on archive, you know, looking at the papers and using the most cutting edge method. But like, that's not your job. Your job is mostly to apply well-known methods in new and interesting ways, which I find endlessly fascinating, as opposed to trying to find the most cutting edge way that, you know, in a paper that only a few people have tried to understand. Ugh. So yes, I have a complicated relationship with my time in academia.
Me too. And I would say for any listeners who, so a master's degree that's not a research master's, which is sort of in between, is like very, very, very different than a PhD. But if you're thinking seriously about a PhD, like really do read up, like there's lots of books, podcasts, et cetera, on the culture of academia and research, because it's worth, you know, it's very, if you've been in industry, it's very, very different. And also it's very different than undergraduate, right? You could think like, oh, I've like, you know, been in school all my life, right? I'm just like, I'm 22, I'm graduating undergraduate. It's quite different. And so just know there's a lot of resources out there that can give you a better idea of what you're going into.
Yeah. And I think just kind of on that note, I think that in academia, like when you think about a PhD in academia, you think, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, I've gone through high school, college, maybe got a master's. I did all the schooling. I just love being smart. And I want to be smart all day and think about smart stuff and really get like rewarded for being the doing the smart thing. And a PhD is like, that's the like the best of all. That's like literally your whole day is just being smart and publishing papers and getting to do smart things. And I think academia preys on that. And I think the expectation that that's the thing to do if you enjoy being solving puzzles, kind of like thinking, like academia, and I kind of fell into this. I'm like, well, I really haven't found a job I like so far. I'm going to go to the smart place where smart people do smart things. But like having been there, I think I found I found so many smart people outside of industry. And I found so many people in academia who are just struggling to get through, not because they're not smart, but because like so much of the job is like grant writing and waiting on papers. And like, it's just really difficult. And so I don't think letting the idea that you can't be as smart in industry or you aren't as smart as someone who has a PhD is like smarter than you because you're PhD. There's a lot to unpack there. And I encourage you, if you're thinking about doing a PhD program, to consider doing that unpacking, to really understand like why are you wanting this PhD? And really, are you defining smartness and success based on this one, you know, accreditation?
Yeah, I think we need to do a bonus episode on academia because there's so much more to say there. But I do want to close out with, so you got your undergraduate master's in math and then your PhD in industrial engineering at Arizona State University, as you said. So what made you choose both like A, the field of industrial engineering, and like B, like the specific university that you went to? Like what was the process of applying and thinking about that?
Great questions. So we're going to talk about Arizona State first. First, I applied to like, I think like 12 schools. Six were like operations research, industrial engineering kind of thing. Six were CS, and I got into like half. But my, at the time, girlfriend, the one that she got into that I also got into, that overlap was Arizona State. So I'm like, okay, there we go. You know, they also gave me a very nice package in terms of like that funding. So like that paying for my research sort of a thing, that was nice. But at the end of the day, it was like, it was very much as much a decision about, if it were not for my girlfriend at the time, I would have gone actually, I think, to Rutgers. Right. So like, it's very much like a my life decision. And, you know, now that I have a PhD and people are not like, oh, you have a PhD from Arizona State. That's not Stanford. Right. Like no one's looking, like I don't find myself being judged by where I get my PhD from, but I put a lot of stress on deciding which is the right school to go to based on how much people are going to view, like, will people view my PhD differently because from Arizona State? And then why industrial engineering? So my undergrad and master's were in math. And so much of math research is like at the PhD level and, you know, academic research is, here's a new theorem, I'm going to prove it. Here's the theorem, now prove it. I have an idea for a theorem and I'm going to prove it. And that means you can spend years thinking about a theorem and you can't, maybe you just don't unlock that one trick to prove it. And then you've got like, you got nothing. But so I don't like that. I really like operations research, and operations research happened to fall into industrial engineering at ASU. But operations research is the just whole field of study around, I want to try and like make optimization decisions, right? Like how do I optimally like allocate resources within a factory, or how do I allocate, you know, charging stations within a road network? Just like, how do you optimize stuff? And there it's like almost, it's very much less about theorems and much more about like, let's come up with some clever solutions to do new things, which is what I love about data science.
Awesome. And with that, shall we take a brief break?
Yes, break. Okay, so we're closing out our episode this week with another game. Woo! Okay, so this game, do you know Dungeons & Dragons?
Not really. I've heard of it. It's a role-playing game, and those dice. Yeah, I've never played. I know, it's very surprising that I've never played it. I seem like the ideal customer.
Well, you're going to play something like it today. You're going to play Discourse and Data, our tabletop role-playing game about the experience of being a data working data science in an organization. For this game, I thought we'd explore a little bit the concept of finding, you know, doing data science work when you're not a data scientist within your job.
Okay.
So that third bullet point in the list of ways you can get data science. And so we're going to play a role-playing game, and you are going to be the person in the game, and I'm going to be the, not dungeon master, the office building master, I guess. And we're going to play it. So we each have, how many dice do you have, Freddie? What do you got?
I have 3 dice.
3 dice. Okay. That's great. So we each have 3 6-sided dice, listeners. And now normally Dungeons & Dragons has, normally Dungeons & Dragons, you use a 20-sided dice, but one of us, and I'm not going to say who, but one of us doesn't have that with her. So we're going to use 3 dice. Okay. So you in this game are a 24-year-old accountant, well considered on your team to be a rising star. You can't help but think you'd be happier in a different field, specifically the field of data science. And so here, this is where the game takes place. You're on the fourth floor. Right now, we begin on the fourth floor of a beige office. The windows let in the afternoon sun, which hides that the carpet has a little more dirt than it should. You are in the office of Pets, 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 a retail chain that sells pet supplies across the United States. In your office, you are the role of an accountant, helping calculate the numbers for Pets, Pets, Pets corporate. The sound of keyboards clicking and small conversations surround you. As you try to stay focused after a 3 coffee kind of day, your boss walks up. So I'm going to be your boss. Hey there, Emily. Good job on the quarterly reports last week. I mean, the exec that really hit him out of the park with them. So, you know, the other day I actually came across this data, and it's all about how the different pets enjoy our pet food, our Pets, Pets, Pets brand pet food. And I just saw this data set, and I thought it might be interesting. Do you want to take a look at it?
Sure, boss.
Sure, boss. That's, so now you got a roll. So you said sure, boss. You're going to roll your dice. We're going to see how well your
I got, it's settling. Oh, 8.
Oh, no. Okay. Yes, that you succeeded at convincing your boss to let you play with the data. Well, sure. If you could find something useful to do with this data, that would just be fantastic. I'm going to mosey on over to the break room, but you just have a grand old time. Your boss walks away as quickly as he came. You're now in front of you. You find somehow mysteriously already has been emailed to you one Excel spreadsheet with pets data.
Yay.
What do you do?
I open it and immediately import it into R. No, actually, I don't open it because Excel is evil and will mess stuff up. So I just download it to my computer.
Wait, but Emily, we're role-playing. Yay. You're going to be an accountant who doesn't know R.
I only know
yet.
Excel. So
you
fine.
Fail your... Yeah, actually, no, hold on. We should roll for this. Make a you know R check.
Okay. I'm going to roll for this. I got 6.
Okay, yes. No, you do not know R.
Okay.
I'm
sorry. So in that case, I open up the Excel spreadsheet on my computer and take a look at it.
Okay. In the spreadsheet, you find columns and columns of data. Each row represents a pet. Each column represents a type of food. And the numbers within it seem to represent some sort of representation of how much that pet liked that food in numerical format.
So probably the first thing I do... Oh, wait. So it's a pet name. Do I have a pet type, like dog or cat, or just names of pets?
Let's say, yeah, you have... I mean, make a perception check.
Okay.
So roll some dice.
So, okay. All right. Now I got a higher seems to be better. I got 14.
Yes. Okay. So you do have the pet type.
Okay.
And so I encourage, I mean, think about what would you tell your listeners to do, seeing this data?
Yeah, what would I tell my listeners to do? Yeah. So, I mean, I fortunately missed the Excel phase, but I think you can do something like a pivot table, and I would look just on average, like by pet type, like dog, cat, or whatever, okay. What the average rating is.
So I'm going to scroll through time. So you spend some time, you're playing with it on your own, you're doing some analysis for it, and like, let's say you come up with some things that you find interesting. Who do you talk to next?
Ooh, okay. So my boss sent it to me because they thought I would find it interesting. I think I'd go back to my boss and I'd be like, hey, boss. And I'd be like, hey, I found a couple things. Like, yeah.
Let's make a corporate intuition check.
Okay. I got 9.
Okay. So you, thinking about this, you remember that you actually do, your company does have a data science team. And they might have some thoughts on what you're doing. Do you want to talk to them?
Yeah, but first I want to go back and actually talk to my boss and be like, who even did you get this data from and why?
Okay, that's good. Okay, so time passes. Maybe you send a Slack to your boss and your boss comes back. Well, how's it going? That was pretty on fast. I think your boss is Southern. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I couldn't tell what accent you were trying
I know.
To.
How'd it go?
It went well. Here are some things I found. Can you tell me more about where you got this data and what team might be interested in it?
Sure, yeah. This came from the product quality team. I guess they run a ton of surveys over there. I bet they'd be interested. Yeah, definitely go see them if you think you found something good.
Yeah, so here actually is maybe where I might go to the data analytics, data science team, if I know them.
Okay, and so just like out of game, like I'm just curious. So you would, rather than going to the team that your boss said brought you the data, you'd go to the data science team first.
Well, maybe this is coming because I'm part of the data science team, but I don't know if like, it feels like, is this a runaround around the data science team or data analytics? Have they worked with this data before? Like, do they know some stuff that I don't? Yeah. Like, and maybe I go to them and they're like, I don't know. We've never like worked with this data. Like, go do whatever you want. Yeah. Like, I guess we can check your cell phone results. Or maybe they'll be like, oh, you know, actually, like, I don't know. I don't know why product analytics would have gone to, or product development would have gone to my boss instead of them.
It
but is it'd be
peculiar.
Good to find out.
It is weird. Okay. Yeah. So you want to go to the data science team?
Yeah.
Okay. So you go, take the elevator to the sixth floor. Here the keyboards click faster than you used to. The light is less from the sun and more from their larger monitors, and each desk has several. As you walk by, you see programs you never heard of and languages you do not understand. There's a clearly one data scientist there who seems to be, you know, like just the one who's most obviously available to talk to.
Hi. So actually, I'm going to pause here. What I would rather do is, I think... it depends on your company, but hopefully there's a data analyst or data scientist if you're an embedded type org who is like pretty closely related to your team, like has done something with accounting before, or there's something like data science office hours that you could check out before you just randomly walk over to your desk in these clearly non-COVID times.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. This is post-COVID. And this beautiful post-COVID future. Okay, so you want to go to an embedded analyst in the product
quality
team?
So rather than just like randomly wander up to this data scientist team, data scientist that I've never met.
So make another corporate intuition check.
Okay, I got 11.
Okay, yes, you remember that. Yes, there is. You saw the you saw the analyst that is embedded in the data scientist embedded that team is down on the third floor. So, you take the elevator there, and okay, so you go up and you walk up and there's the data scientist is a woman in her late 30s. When you go up to talk to her, her eyes are around like she always has three thoughts going on at once. What do you say?
Is she embedded with the accounting team or with the product team?
No, with the product quality team.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You say like, so I'd say like, hey, do I know her name?
I'd yes.
Probably have found it out. I'm like, hey, Jacqueline.
Make it up right now.
Okay,
there we go.
I know.
Okay, Jacqueline. Sure, yeah.
So I'll be like, hey, Jacqueline, I'm, you know, Emily from the accounting team. My boss got this data from the product team on surveys about pet food. I'm interested in doing some more analytics. I did some work on it. I was wondering if I could chat with you about it.
That sounds great. I would love to see the work you have and possibly mentor you.
Yay!
And game.
Success!
Yes, you won. Yes, good job. You beat Discourse and Data. I had like a lot more trees of possibilities you could go down.
Did you?
Yeah. That was great. And that's
so this was really a test to see like my own corporate intuition slash like
yeah a little but yeah, so you basically this is what D&D is, but not with nerd stuff, with other nerd stuff,
with wizards and dragons and all that good stuff. Yeah no, but I think that was a good and I think just quickly that does bring this game does bring up like your situation might be very different at different companies. Is there a data science team? Is there a data analytics team? Are there embedded? And like you could make your own tree of possibilities.
And with that, let's make our own tree of an episode bloom. You want to close it out?
That's our show for the week. Check us out on our next episode as we discuss building your data science portfolio. Thank you for listening. Please tweet at us or share on LinkedIn your data science opinions, feedback on the show, or questions for us with the hashtag DataSciCareer. You can buy a copy of the book at bestbook.cool and use code BuildBook40%. That's BuildBook40% symbol for 40% off. Our theme song is by the extremely funny Matt Bouchel, and thanks to our publisher Manning for helping our book exist.
And may your models always converge.